The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
And I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle streaming radio 24/7. And today, believe it or not, is the 17th of November 2016. Go out to motivationmuscle.com, download the two free ebooks, The Top 10 Ways to Build Mind and Muscle. It's 10 paragraphs with 5 bullet points between each paragraph, and our 30-day program where it's the first time I've taken a conventional lift, as in the bench press and the squat, and show you how to overload in the power rack on both lifts. And in the middle of the week, you're going to get one of the best courses I've ever put out, even though it's short, on sandbag training. And I even give you the sandbag routine that I use to get ready to lift stones. It doesn't matter if you're going to lift stones or not. You want to get in the best shape of your life. And the beauty about sandbag training is you can make it any size you want. So you can go from a 10-pound sandbag to a 300-pound if you want. And that kind of stuff, the way I set it up with the speed, the endurance, and the strength, and then we go backwards with it, this alone will get you in the best shape of your life. And guess what? Sand's cheap. Sandbags are cheap. And the rest is up to you, your ability, how far you want to take it. And obviously the word we use around here a lot is action. So go out there and check that all out. Also, go out to motivationmuscle.com/category/podcast. We have our good friend and my chiropractor on today, Mark Colligan. And Mark and I have done one show previous when we introduced him to all of our family here. But if you want to go out and look at a library, we've got more out there than anybody I know of. I've got more content, not only there, but in my blog. And I've had people come in here and look at my stuff that wanted to do work for me and couldn't believe the amount of content sitting out there. We've got everything from chiropractic, MMA, Highland Games, boxing. We've got strongman, stone lifting, power lifting, you name it. And the biggest thing we got here is mental tenacity. We've got the best people mentally, whether they've written books or they go around and speak. I don't know any show that's got what we got. So go out there and check all that out, and I guarantee you, you're going to have success in your life. Also, too, before I bring Mark in, anybody that's listening to this show on a regular basis knows how much we're getting into, especially the manly books, responsibility, things of that nature, which you always talk about. But I am reading excerpts now, and next year there's a number of us who are going to get together and go after certain books. We're going to read them, and we're going to discuss them on here because I think it's that pertinent. Two of the books I've been reading out of has been Coach John Wooden and Cowboys, Mountain Men, and Grizzly Bears. Incredible book, really great stories. So this is from a lifetime of observation and reflections on and off the court. Coach John Wooden with Steve Jamison. Goes like this. The opinion of others. Do not become too concerned about what others may think of you. Be very concerned about what you think of yourself. Too often we care more about a stranger's opinion of us than our own. Your opinion of yourself begins on the inside with your character. What do you believe in, and are you willing to stand up for it despite what others may think or say? It's what my dad meant when he said, be true to yourself. This comes first, then the opinion of others. And I'll add one more thing on it, which I say at the end of the show, among many things, as my dad said all the time, is be a leader, not a follower. Well, like I said, we got our good friend Mark Colligan on here today, and I'm going to give you a little information on this gentleman before we bring him in. And here we go. He's a life chiropractic college graduate, He's an associate of Dr. John Staples and a chiropractor who specializes in sports injuries, whole food nutrition, and preventative care. And we're going to talk about fascia today. Mark has just gotten back from a seminar on that, and I'm very anxious to hear what he's got because tomorrow I've got to go down and see him. So, Mark, welcome back to Motivation and Muscle, sir.
Hey, Eric.
It's great to have you back. Anything I missed, obviously give out your website, anything in your bio, and we'll get started on today's subject, please.
Well, my website, SauganeesChiropracticCenter.com, and we're going to talk about fascia, so I'll just briefly describe how I got slowly into that idea.
Okay.
When I was in chiropractic college, they would literally, in the cadaver lab and in the textbooks, and the general state of affairs back then, they would literally cut away the fascia to describe and to reveal the important bits. Fascia was viewed back then by most people as sort of being like packing material, yep. Insulation. It didn't seem to be have any real major function from that, you know, perception. Of course, that idea is flipped on its end, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But what I noticed relatively early on in my chiropractic career is that there was a certain percentage of clients that would do really well with joint manipulation, joint movement, and joint work. But there was also another percentage of clients, and I don't know the exact percentages, whatever I'd say, I'd be making it up, but that wouldn't get well or get well in a short term. And so I noticed right away that that's got to be a soft tissue issue because we're adequately addressing the hard tissue, you know, in other words, the joints.
Yep.
So I started doing trigger point work early on in my career, which developed from Dr. Janet Travell, who is a medical doctor, and she wrote the definitive textbooks, two of them on trigger points. Actually, for a short time, she was also the physician for John F. Kennedy.
Okay.
Until, you know, conservative care couldn't work because he had so many steroid shots that he ended up getting compression fractures. You know, the side effects of that stuff wasn't really known back then.
Yep.
So he ended up, just as a little aside, working with this doctor that was nicknamed Dr. Feelgood. He had a concoction that you know, was filled with like a little bit of everything: speed, painkillers, anti-inflammatory, organ animal stuff, vitamins. And in fact, he was out of New York City. The KGB broke into his office to figure out what he was shooting Kennedy with. And so when during the Cuban Missile Crisis, Khrushchev knew that Kennedy was flying high and feeling mean.
Yep.
And it's an interesting historical moment because here is the leader of the Western world, John F. Kennedy, is basically at this point, you know, at least from one perspective, you know, addicted to these, you know, this concoction.
Yeah.
And Khrushchev knew it and used it to his advantage in whatever way he could. That's another whole story. But just another one is really funny. You know that famous video with Marilyn Monroe singing Happy Birthday, Mr.
Sure,
President?
Sure, sure.
Well, before she went out to do that, Dr. Feelgood gave her a shot of the Feelgood stuff. So she was flying high and feeling mean. You know?
God.
And then, you know, this is during the Cuban Missile Crisis, but that's another story.
Yeah.
But he had a lot of famous clients. He had Mickey Mantle. One of the reasons Mickey Mantle had to drop out of the race with Roger Maris is because when he got a shot from Feelgood, his hip got infected from the shot and he had to drop out.
Oh, jeez.
If he had done fascia work, he could have, you know, it could have been a more interesting season. But anyway, so that's Dr. Janet Travell. And then there was a chiropractor at that point, Dr. Raymond Nemo, who was doing the same thing. So pretty much as soon as Dr. Janet Travell discovered his whole idea of trigger points and she mapped out all their referred pain patterns, it was almost entirely forgotten within the medical profession. And Dr. Raymond Nemo's work was, let's just say, had not a big following within the chiropractic profession because we weren't, at that point in our profession, really thinking of soft tissue. It was all about joints.
Yep.
So once I discovered the trigger points, and you noticed, like, wow, this could help these, you know, certain percentages of other people that were falling through the cracks. So that was really interesting. I actually got into trigger points myself even a little more because I got one in my gluteus minimus muscle. And at first didn't know what the heck it was. And once I figured it out, I was like, okay, now I've seen that pattern, you know, dozens of times in clients.
Yep.
So, you know, I went from trigger points to did that for a while. And then all of a sudden this other approach, you know, called ART, active yep. release, came yep. on the scene. And that was taking soft tissue work to another level, you know, creating movement and elongation of the tissues while you're treating. And that was fun, and that was insightful. And then the next one after that was what's generally called Graston work, but really it's the catch-all term is instrument-assisted soft tissue manipulation, basically using some sort of tool, usually stainless steel, mm-hmm. to glide on the tissue while you're, you know, creating some fascial movement and release. And that technique, just interestingly enough, is actually thousands of years old. That developed from guasha, which is an acupuncture technique. They had a slightly different intent, but in other words, it's been around a long time.
Yeah.
Back in the day, they would use stones, animal horns, utensils, whatever they had, really.
Yep.
So we, Dr. Graston developed these stainless steel tools that were sort of shaped anatomically to accommodate different body parts, and they can also be disinfected. So that was more of a Western model. And and I use those, you know.
Yep.
I use what's called factor tools, which is just basically using instrument-assisted tools while you're creating movement patterns. And that, you know, that, and I still use that, and that was great. And then I got hooked into this thing called Shockwave, and we talked about that, I think, last time.
Yep, a little
which
bit.
Which basically uses percussion, usually anywhere from 8 to 15 impulses a second to, again, create a change, a release, a softening in the tissue. What's interesting, in the fascial world, they don't even know what happens when you treat the fascia.
Okay.
At the seminar I was just at, the guy said, and I think he's right, it's going to take 20 years for them to just lay it out. Like, what's really going on? Because there's all kinds of theories about, you know, what's going on, what can happen, what is happening. I don't think anybody fully knows. Clinically, we see a lot of change. What's happening inside, it's sort of open-minded right now. But Shockwave uses, it's called Shockwave because basically the percussive impulse applicator head is moving faster than the speed of sound, you know, like 8 to 10, 12, 15 times a second, very fast. And so it creates this shock wave, which then has an effect on the tissue called cavitation, which breaks down, again, soft tissue, whether it's fascia or tendon or ligament. Mm-hmm. And I use that a lot still. It's great stuff.
Yep.
And I love it, and it's my go-to technique. And around that time, I also got involved with deep tissue laser, which is using light energy to attempt the same idea. I use laser often in conjunction with shockwave because they work great together. I got involved with the shockwave because I found straight up laser wasn't enough to break down these deeper fascial patterns. You know, that's using light energy. You really need mechanical energy. The research is showing you need mechanical energy to break up these deep-seated fascial adhesions. And that means using force of some sort, whether it's a shockwave. Nice thing about shockwave, even though it's using a lot of force, it's light. You don't really feel it.
No.
At least the way I do it, it shouldn't hurt.
No, not at all. Well, this is what I want to ask you too to start out, obviously. And if there's more you need to say, it'll only be a minute. For anybody that's not heard you on the show before, I've always explained in the beginning, I've gone to you for years, and so I'm very familiar with everything you're talking about. But you know, I know you work on everybody, but you also work on a lot of really good athletes, people that are really in the elite piece of that stuff. What do you find with athletes? I mean, well, you can use me if you want. I don't care. It doesn't matter. I mean, I've come down. I've got to come down tomorrow. I've got an SI joint sprain right now, which is allowing me to train. But like when I'm sitting here and compressing my back, that's when you start feeling it. But what do you find with fascia, especially on athletes? Is it something that is very common among us, or is it just generally the whole population? Where if you could really put a number, what do you see in your whole practice there? Who's got more fascia damage, so to speak? You know, the athlete or the regular run of the mill?
Well, first of all, essentially, fascia is the new buzzword in bodywork, right?
Okay. Yep.
That's so. In other words, it went from being this superfluous material that was, again, thought about as insulation to being probably the most important structure in the body. It's also called connective tissue. It's the only tissue that is everywhere.
Yep.
It's, not only does it surround every muscle, every joint, every organ, it's actually integral to every muscle. So every muscle fiber is actually sitting in a tunnel of fascia.
Okay.
So every muscle is actually literally thousands of these little fascial tunnels. It's on the outside, inside of the circulatory system. So, for example, you know I had an injury to my kidney years ago.
Yep.
Doing some heavy lifting. And that was a fascial injury to my kidney from a tug on this fascial kind of link. Of course, I didn't know at the time, and medical doctors don't have a language for that. So it's the structure that has been most overlooked. It's the structure that's always involved in chronic injuries. And more to your point with athletes, it's always an issue with athletes because of overuse, because of injury. You know, you find it in everyone, but certainly the more active you are, the more potential for, you know, injury and partial overuse. But interestingly enough, if you're inactive, that could be just as bad because you just everything locks up.
Yeah,
so you don't tear, but everything just sort of, you know, twists and, you know. So, like, for example, this class I just took, that class is called Partial Distortion Model.
Okay.
What's interesting about that class is the doctor who's an osteopath, he's actually deceased at this point, but his technique, he divided the fascial lesions into six different patterns. And what that does is it helps practitioners to quickly assess what is the nature of that fascia. Okay, we know it's a fascial injury, but what has it done? Is it twisted? Is it, you know, is it compressed? I'll go over the six different lesions real quick.
Okay.
Interesting. So one of the most important things that this technique does is it gives you these fascial tells, I call them. So you know when you play poker, if you ever play poker and you watch people, they give you a tell.
Yep.
Like one guy may lick his lips when he's got a good hand. Or
yep.
Know. So if you're really good at poker, you can sort of discern these very subtle tells. So what this guy discovered was there's different tells for different fascial strains, verbally and also physically descriptive. So I just worked on a client this morning, the Achilles tendonitis. So I'm not open today, but that was an emergency for, you know, he's a kayak athlete. He wanted to get back in shape. So we found in him two different primary fascial strain patterns. So the first one was, it's called a trigger band. That's the most common. So a trigger band, the way that it's described, and this is a model. It's not, these models are never really what's happening because we don't even know what's happening inside. We just know what it feels like from the outside. It feels like a zipper. That's not, you know, you can either say it's not sliding or it's stuck open or whatever. It's like this line in the fascia that is and when it could be tight, it could be adhesions. It's just not working. So we were trying to trigger band with him, and that's usually in the direction of the muscle fibers. You know, it could be anywhere in the body. And you do that with a deep, either with a shock wave or the thumb to create that elongation of the tissue. Now, the other one that we did, which is very interesting, and in the fascial distortion model, it's called a continuum injury. And what this doctor discovered was when a tendon or a ligament anchors into the bone, there's not this, you know, black and white the delineated line where one part is bone and one part is tendon or ligament. There's bone and there's tendon or ligament, and then there's this zone where it's a little of both microscopically. So that zone is where you want to treat, because when you have an injury, that area becomes less susceptible and it can actually become more stuck in a microscopic bone configuration or tendon or ligament configuration, and that's always at the attachment point of a bone. So you treat that a certain way.
Yep.
He had both of those. Basically, the attachment point for the Achilles tendon, and then he had a medial trigger band. And so once you're able to discern the type of lesion you have, you get a different strategy for treating it.
Yep.
And again, the most, he came up with six of them. The one I really found the most interesting was, he calls them herniated trigger bands. And that's very similar to, herniated trigger points, excuse me. They're very similar to trigger points. I was calling those trigger points because I was treating those points too. But trigger points are really on muscle fibers. Herniated trigger points are areas between tissue where, just anatomically, it's a prone area where you can have a fascial surface herniate up into the next hot fascial surface. So here's a classic example. You have all these hip rotators in your butt, and if they fan out, there's, you know, a bunch of them. But in between those fibers, even though they're snug to each other, you can have a fascial plane herniate right between those muscles.
Okay.
So the significance of that is, if someone comes in with sciatica and you're treating a trigger point in the piriformis or a taut piriformis, that's a whole different treatment procedure versus working with a herniated trigger point. I mean, you have to treat it totally different. And if you don't treat it totally different, you won't have a change in the symptoms. So what's nice about this, the way this fellow organized it, and he took him years and years to organize this, you can assess fairly quickly what type of injury the person's had, and then from that, you assign a different treatment strategy.
Yep.
And most often, most people will have two or three of them at one time in different places, but they're often connected. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when you do a herniated trigger point, often on top of that, there's a trigger band that you got to use to kind of get that to work. So it's a very interesting approach. And you asked about athletes.
Yeah.
It's a very, what we call a direct approach, which means it's very like, let's, here it is, let's get it.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty aggressive. It's you know, it's a physical technique. And athletes, this technique is really great for athletes, because the advantage of athletes is they're the kind of people that are like, okay, I just want to get better, do what you got to do.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, go for it. The average person down the block may not want me to do that, which is fine. I always have to use the technique the person is willing to accept and the body wants. But athletes are great because with this fascia distortion model, I mean, you can go in there and just get it.
Yeah.
And in a short time, and they're just willing to do whatever it takes. Kind of like they give, you know, most of my clients, it's kind of an honor in a way, because they sort of say to me, you know, do whatever you want to do. I don't care. I trust you.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, you know something? That's a big thing because, you know, I come quite a distance down to you, and, you know, you've told me about people, other people to look at and this and that. And I've gone to you for so long, and this all goes with everything we're talking about. I don't feel like starting new with somebody, and you and I have talked before. I'm not a big guy that likes people putting their hands on me to begin with, and it's nothing against anybody. But I think you got to be comfortable with who you're going to, because you know from you know, and I know people that go. People will fight you when you're trying to do things to them, because either they're afraid, they don't know how to relax their body, and that makes it very hard for you. So I think the whole idea with anybody you go to, especially when you're getting into this deep tissue stuff, is you've got to trust your practitioner totally. And I don't think there's anything like having history with people, especially people that do the right thing for you. And you know, when I come down there, I just tell you, go. I can take pretty much anything you're going to dish to me, probably, or I will. I'll try the best I can. So I think that's one of the most pertinent things. Something else I want to ask you, Mark, because, you know, we always talk about collagen and things of that. I know we're talking soft tissue, but how does collagen, if any, how does that enter into, you know, the muscle, tendon, the bone, and anything we're doing with this type of fascia too, if you could explain that?
Well, collagen is composed of the main proteins of connective tissue. So the theory with taking collagen as a supplement is traditional people, and you know, we've had this conversation before, I'm a big fan of what's called a traditional diet,
yep,
Western Price approach. Traditional people ate all those parts that contained a lot of collagen, all the gristle,
yep,
the bone marrow, the gelatin, the you know, the bone broth, the tendons, you know, they didn't throw out anything.
Exactly.
Oftentimes,
yep,
the parts that we throw away, they would eat first, the organs. And if they had extra, they would use the muscle meats to give either to the lowest guy on the totem pole or to the animals.
Yeah.
So we've taken that part and we prioritize that, and all the other parts, including the organs and everything, we don't really eat it.
Yep.
And I'm not saying you should. That's not my point. The point is that we still need it.
Yeah.
So coming from a traditional diet standpoint, and there's many different perspectives on diet, as you know, but I'm talking about the one that I think that makes the most sense to me, is if we needed those things then, we still need them now. Nothing's changed. Although in our industrial agricultural system, you know, it's changed everything, but
yep,
our needs haven't changed. So I look at collagen, if people aren't doing bone broth, I look at collagen almost as if I were like a vitamin.
Yeah.
So I think it's that important to support our soft tissue structures. Unless people are eating a lot of bone broth and, you know, getting gelatin and things like that,
yep,
then they probably don't need it. But now you can take other things to synthesize your own collagen, but the traditional diet, the axiom that I use is what you have is what you need. So
yep,
if you have a structural stuff, you need to eat structural stuff.
Yep.
If you have a thyroid, you need to eat thyroid. Now, as crazy as that may sound, when I first started here, the medical treatment for a thyroid condition was called Ammer thyroid.
Okay.
Did you ever hear of that?
No, I haven't.
Do you know what it is?
No. Tell everybody. I'm interested.
It's pig thyroid.
Oh, really? Okay.
They just gave you pig thyroid.
So okay.
That's from a naturalistic perspective, that's actually a better treatment than Synthroid, because not only does it have some hormone in it, but you got all the vitamins and minerals,
yep,
and composition of that thyroid to feed the, you know, the thyroid, right?
Yep. Yep.
The challenge with that was a great, and chiropractors still use thyroid from animals if the person's okay with that. We just take out the hormones because that's not something we want to add. We want to look at it totally nutritionally. The challenge for that with medical doctors was every time you harvest a pig thyroid, there was no standard for the amount of hormone in it.
Okay.
So that is a hard thing to regulate, you know, because you don't know. Whereas with Synthroid, you can know the exact milligrams of, you know, thyroxine in it. But then you're not feeding the thyroid at the same time. The idea with natural medicine is, let's see if we can feed that organ or feed that system, whatever it is, and then maybe the body can jumpstart it and take over, you know?
Yeah.
If you give the body the hormone, it's actually not going to strengthen the organ. It's going to either keep it the same or weaken it, because in the case of the thyroid, it looks out and says, hey, look at all this thyroxine I got in the bloodstream. Of course, the thyroid can't distinguish the fact that it's synthetic. So the thyroid just kind of, you know, rests. And so it's not a bad thing. I mean, that just essentially means you got to take that Synthroid, you know, for the rest of your life.
Yeah, yep.
But the idea of natural medicine is saying, hey, maybe if we feed the thyroid, we can get this thing working. Not always possible, of course, but, you know, so, but worthy of a primary try. You can always go to the, you know, the pharmaceutical approach secondary.
Yeah.
Because, you know, chiropractic is not against pharmaceuticals by any means. Our stance is always, let's try, you know, conservative approach first.
Yep.
You know, and go from there.
Well, let me add, when we're talking diet too, I mean, I know what you're kind of doing, but explain to everybody. Now, I'll tell everybody, I was down to Mark's place last week, and I've got some a collagen style. Tell them about that brand that you sell down there, but also, too, a great place, and I'm sure you can tell anybody where to go if they're in our area, you know, upstate New York, going down towards the city, where to get, like, bone broth, or you want to get a gelatin or that. Now, I use a lot of stuff from U.S. Wellness Meats, John Wood. He's a super guy. He's been on the show, and I've known him probably for 20 years. But go in a little bit about your diet. Obviously, that product that I purchased from you, and, you know, where maybe down near your area, we got a co-op here. I know they got bone broth, but I don't see the gelatin or anything. So if you wouldn't mind, tell everybody here, all our listeners, a little bit about your diet. What I mean, obviously, I got an idea, but and I pretty much go with a lot you go with. But also where we can get a hold of this stuff and your product you have in the office, please.
Sure. Well, if anybody, you know, wants to know about any of these things, what you do is you go on the Weston Price Foundation site, and that will describe all the things we're talking about, and
yep.
I'll go over it a little bit. But what's cool about the Weston Price Foundation is chapters around the whole country. So then you find out where your chapter is, and certainly I didn't one around here, there's one in Albany.
Yep.
And you can get involved with that chapter, whatever level you want. But you can also just talk to them and say, hey, listen, I'm looking for this or that. Where can I get it? Where can I get raw milk?
Yep.
And they'll know all that stuff
yep.
because they live there. So that's just a local resource. That's the best way to find out. Like, I'll give you an example. My sister was trying to eat well, and she lives on Long Island.
Yep.
And I was telling her, you know, you got to get off the pasteurized milk. We got to get your grass-fed beef and, you know, all the things that
yeah.
we talked about.
Yeah.
And she's like, where am I going to get it? Well, it turns out that the Amish deliver, like, twice a month, two blocks from her house.
Wow.
So it's there. You know, people
yeah.
just don't
yeah.
know about it.
Yeah.
So once you realize the importance of it and you'll look, you'll find it, because there's enough awareness that all this stuff – in one form or another, you can get it in many different venues. I mean, certainly you can get it even on the web. I mean, there's thousands of places, right? So, but when I use collagen, I'm coming from the Weston Price Foundation, again, the traditional diet.
Yep.
So what did they do? Well, it was always grass-fed, you know, organic beef, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I had to go with collagen. So you can get collagen. There's different companies that sell it. I won't mention any names, but it's not grass-fed and it's not organic.
Right.
And according to them, it's not a big deal because most of that stuff goes into fatty tissue. And it's probably right, you know, most of it. But, I'm always looking at the top-tier products, the top-tier way of looking at it. So I got grass-fed organic cow collagen. Now,
yep.
the problem is, this is how sort of, awkward we are in this country about that. There isn't enough cows in this country to create a collagen business that are grass-fed organic.
Mm-hmm.
This comes from South America. I think it's Brazil or Argentina.
It's Brazil. You got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's only because if you want to set up a collagen business, you can't do it in the United States because there's not enough of them around. You know, how crazy is that? You know, that's how crazy it is in this country.
Yeah.
So, you know, we should be leading the country. But, you know, as you know, what I always tell my clients, whenever you see the word health being propagated by the government
yep.
or the medical institution or the corporations, wherever they are, you got to realize that that word means economics.
Yep.
The word health has gotten lost in the shuffle, and there's whole different agendas about that. But here's another example. You talk about collagen. One of the most important things to support collagen is a vitamin, is whole vitamin C, right? We've talked
yep.
about this.
Yep.
So yes, most people, including, you know, the CDC and the AMA, most, you know, most of the official government institutions, what is vitamin C? And the majority of people would say, like 99%, it's ascorbic acid.
Yep.
Vitamin C. Well, ascorbic acid cannot, in and of itself, strengthen and support your collagen system, your fascial system. You need the whole vitamin C. And when you look at nature at vitamin C, it's made of a bunch of co-synergists. It's not just ascorbic acid. And you need all of that to function as a vitamin. So one of the reasons we're in so much trouble in this country is we don't even, the institutions, that is, at least, don't even know really what a vitamin is.
Yep.
And so from a naturalistic point of view, a vitamin is what nature shows it to be. So when you find vitamin C in foods and herbs and things, that's what it is. It's never isolated as ascorbic acid. So if I'm a betting guy, I'm always going to go with nature versus the theory of the day. So but here's the bottom line. If I give someone whole vitamin C to come in with nosebleeds,
yep,
and that's a capillary fragility issue, if I give whole vitamin C, usually within 2 weeks, like most of the time, like 99% of the time, the nosebleeds stop.
Yeah.
It's that quick.
Yep.
If I give ascorbic acid, I would actually have nothing happen. And really, when you have chronic nosebleeds or hyperactive bruising reactions, as far as I'm concerned, that's sort of a subclinical scurvy.
Yep.
The scurvy is a vitamin C deficiency where you just bleed out.
Yep.
So if you have these small bleeding gums, that could be, not always, indicative of a whole vitamin C deficiency. So that's something you want to, if you talk about, the structure, you want to make sure you're getting enough whole vitamin C. And one of the reasons why we're so deficient in that in this country is because all the fruits and vegetables are picked early for shipping. And the majority of the vitamin C occurs at the last stages of ripening. So when you pick them early, you can ship them because you can ship them when they're ripe, you'll be mush, right?
Exactly.
So if you ship them when they're not ripe, you're losing out on a good deal of the vitamin C. So, but also vitamin C is a major constituent of our adrenal glands, and everybody's under stress. They're all spinning, so we're just burning through our adrenals, and we're burning through vitamin C, like you need it. So we're not getting enough, and we're using a lot of it. And that combination generally means, most people could use that support also, in one form or another.
Yeah.
But that's just an example of why so many people in this country are getting sick is because we don't know how to eat because everybody's eating in the industrial agriculture system, majority of people. And then they go to vitamins, and most of the vitamins on the market, meaning more than 50%, right, higher than that, are all these synthetic fragmented vitamins, and not the whole thing like C.
Yep.
And then that doesn't work generally. And then they go to the pharmaceuticals, and then, of course, that has its own side effects and such. So, people are starving because they're not getting all the nutrients they need. They're eating, and actually all these synthetic vitamins are all actually a stressor for you anyway.
Yeah.
And the majority of those things have some, if you go back far enough, like the vitamin E is often made by big conglomerates or pharmaceutical companies anyway.
Yeah.
So the vitamin companies act like a body, like a stressor too.
Well, I was going to say, toxic.
My point is, no wonder we're in the shape we're in. There was a nutritionist years ago who wrote a book called Are You Confused? Pyroaretha. And it's the truth. I mean, nobody knows any of the stuff we're talking about because it's not being taught. But more importantly, all the authorities are giving people, at least from a natural food perspective, misinformation. Now, I'm not saying they're wrong because it's 100 theories for every camp. But from a natural food perspective, you got to get the whole thing or you're not getting it. Just like, I'm a big fan of cod liver oil.
Yeah, right.
Same principle. In order for vitamin D to be functional, first of all, there's dozens of forms of vitamin D, not just vitamin D3, and it's got to be combined with whole natural vitamin A. You never find vitamin D isolated in itself without A. In the egg yolk, in the cod liver, and on the organ meat, that they're synergistic. They need to be together to work. So when you take high doses of vitamin D3, which is kind of in vogue right now, do another blood test, you'll look at the blood test and go, wow, you're doing great. Look at all that vitamin D. And all that means is you got tons of this vitamin D3 floating around the bloodstream, not really functionally doing anything.
Right. You're not utilizing what you're putting in. And that's the thing with everything. We know about the raw milk. You do it. I do it. The grass-fed beef. You got. And I'll tell you something. I don't know if we brought this up last time. But I tell everybody, whenever we get into this, be very careful when you buy grass-fed beef because a lot of times they're not finishing it that way. All right? I've gone to multiple places, and I'm not going to mention their name because I don't like the places. To begin with, I've asked people at the counter about it, and they get highly upset at me. And I want to know why. And this is what I do. and it really puts them on the defensive, is I said, if there's any soy in it with finishing it or when you're doing it, I can't eat it because I'm allergic to it. That makes them scared as hell. They'll go back and look at their book or grab somebody. I want to tell everybody, it's not everywhere, but probably if you want to do a percentage, it might even be 9 out of 10 places use that in the very end. You don't want that stuff in your meat. That's it, period. And probably
GMO soy too.
Absolutely. And if you know any of the big name, supposedly quote unquote grocery stores, organic, they're very big, very wealthy, and in my opinion, they rip people off. I've gone to places, other places, where they had the same product. They were charging 3 times that product. It's absolutely ridiculous. So I'm just warning everybody who's never heard me say this, that be very careful when you do that. But there's another thing I want to talk about, especially with fascia. And you and I have talked, you know, offline about this a number of times, but I really want everybody to be aware. What does fats play in fascia like that? Because I eat a lot of fat. I eat a lot of avocado mixed with butter, and obviously I put that in through my eggs and all that. Plus, you know, when we're talking about soy and obviously man killers like that, a lot of stuff like broccoli, you know, cauliflower, cabbage, things of that nature, obviously mixing avocados in there because they're very big on that. So, Mark, how do the fats enter into everything we're doing, whether it's fascia, ligament, tendon, all that? And if they do or don't, just explain to everybody what your feeling is on that, please.
Well, let me just follow up on something you said about soy.
Yeah.
Soy, if it's organic and fermented, I have no issue with it.
Okay.
So fermented soy are things like tempeh, miso, tamari. Because when the soy is not fermented, and that stuff, you know, basically like tofu and soy milk, when it's not fermented, it seems to be a repressed mineral absorption, and it seems to sometimes affect the endocrine system.
Exactly.
So from a natural point of view, non-fermented soy, you know, is to be avoided. Fermented soy, as long as it's organic, non-GMO, it's fine.
Okay.
So, you know, the people that are against soy don't always know that classification. The problem is that they put soy now in so many things that you got to read everything because it's in, you know, a lot. It's a filler. It's cheap. They pump out tons of it with the GMOs. The other way, just to finish another thought, is when they finish up the cow, like a lot of people in this area, Hudson Valley, we can still get meat at the farm.
Yeah.
So I was buying a half a cow at a time for one of my clients, and he would finish. He has 80 acres, so he's all grass-fed cow, all organic corn, and he would finish off the cow in the fall with some organic corn.
Yep.
And they do that because it gives it a less wild flavor. You know, it gives it more what people are used to in meat.
Yep.
Grass-fed cows and grass-fed animal products taste more gamey.
Yeah,
so,
they do.
You know, for economics, they're saying, well, let's finish it off with a little soy or corn to, you know, make it taste a little better for the palates of Americans. So is that a bad or good thing? Well, I mean, if it's organic corn, it's probably not bad, although, you know, cows are supposed to be grass feeders and not grain feeders. So I guess you could look at it whatever way, but, you know, that's why they do it. But, you know, also what people don't realize is if you look around and you talk to people, like I said, I was getting the meat butchered for $2 a pound. That's everything.
Yep.
I mean, you can't buy chopping for $2 a pound. So, you know, the thing is, there's this idea in this country that it costs a lot of money to eat good. And it can, but it doesn't have to. If you know where to look and you know what to eat, you can do it. I'll just give you another classic example. I have clients that can't afford organic chicken.
Right.
I'm like, okay, but let's have you make chicken soup. Get the organic chicken for the chicken soup. Now you got 10 quarts of chicken soup. That organic chicken is costing you, you know, $2 a meal with all the good organic carrots in there and everything. You can afford to do that. So you can afford to do certain ways if you can't afford to do it all the time. But also, if you look, like I said, this organic chicken, the organic beef I got from this fellow Ted, as long as you have a freezer, I mean, that stuff is the best meat around, and it's cheaper than I can get it in the store for chopped meat.
Yep.
And I'm getting all, everything, you know, the bones, I'm getting, you know. But now, to address your question about the fat, you know, we'll go back to Weston Price.
Okay.
Guy. What he found on average, he studied with 14 different indigenous cultures all around the world, And he would study a culture when they were healthy. He didn't want to, he wasn't looking for a disease model, as we often do. He was looking for a healthy model. Because what he started noticing at the turn of the century is Americans started getting sick with all these weird things that are pretty commonplace now, like autoimmune diseases and diabetes and heart disease and cancer and all that stuff. You know, that was rare back then. It just started ramping up, and now we're, you know, it's an epidemic. So what the interesting thing he found was, no matter where he was, it was a very similar amount of nutrients that people were taking in. So even if you lived in different environments, which of course they all did, the average person, tribe, whatever, took in about 50% of their calories from fat.
Right.
And that's an average. Some people were down to like 35, some people up to 60, but about average, about 50. I just, you know, give or take. So that was interesting because, you know, no matter where you lived, that was happening. And then out of that, about 50% of that calories came from saturated fat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one that's been demonized in our culture.
Totally.
So, for example, if you're in the Caribbean, you ate, you know, 120 coconuts a year or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're in Switzerland, you're eating all this grass-fed cow product, milk and cheese and butter, and so on. So what I found interesting about Weston Price was it didn't matter what you were eating, it's what are you getting.
Yeah.
So that's the interesting thing about Weston Price, is because basically almost any diet, you can make it work. Because basically most people aren't going to change their diet. But if you can get them to get what they need, either directly through the diet or through food concentrates, you're good, you know.
Yeah.
So when I look at fats, that's it's the reason why fats got demonized, number one, is because when you eat fats, for every gram of fat you eat, you get 12 calories. You know, in other words, so we look at calories as being a bad thing.
Right.
Calories are nothing more than like when you go to the Sunoco gas pump and it's 93 octane.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting more fuel.
Yep.
Fat just gives you more fuel, and that's not a bad thing. It actually gives more energy. That's what it's
saying. Yeah.
I used to do some winter hiking, and we'd be in eating breakfast in the morning. You know, people would stick a stick of butter in their oatmeal.
Cause that's absolutely.
All the fat. It keep you warm and keep you energetic to lunch.
Yep. Yep.
So most people eat, the breakfast for the average kid in this country is pasteurized milk and cereal.
Yeah.
You know, literally no value in that. I don't know if I told you that study where they took a bunch of these cereals and they gave it to the rats, and they gave the boxes to another bunch of rats, and
yep.
the rats ate the box lived longer.
Mm-hmm.
These cereals have no value. It's just all sprayed on chemical, synthetic, you know, stuff.
So, not to interrupt you, too.
Go ahead. That's my point.
Well, not to interrupt you, I think I told you last time I was down there, too, there's like this little block down below, and I can't remember the exact verbiage, but it's something to the effect where the wheat or whatever they're using in it now is genetically grown, okay? So that's a new thing, because I'm a guy that loves to go, you know, I still go to a conventional store sometimes because I pick stuff up for my mom, and not that I let her eat a lot of that stuff either, but, you know, eggs or whatever. So I love going down the bread aisle and the cereal aisle. I just have always loved doing that since I was a kid. And I can't tell you, I looked and I was like, I don't believe they're doing it. And maybe they were doing it for a long time and not even labeling it. But, boy, people just grab things without even looking at them. And I watch them. They just toss them in their cart. And then they're wondering what's going on with them. And I'll tell you another thing, Mark, when you're talking about energy from fat. Now, I've got a train in 4 hours, and I will start right after this show. I already have. I'm going to whip some avocado and butter up. I'll obviously have lunch at some point, but I will be eating a lot of fat. I got these little, what do you want to call it, small creams from a dairy around here. They're not organic, but, you know, no growth hormone. I'll be sipping a few of those before I go out, and I'll bring a small one out with me when I train besides my water. And I've never had a time where I didn't train where I was, like, just pulverizing stuff when I was eating a lot of fat before that. I try to tell people that, especially in the weightlifting world, because I'm telling you right now, when you go out there, you're fired and energized. And you know, there is another thing we didn't even hit upon, and we can hit that if you want. Just the way that mess, well, it doesn't mess, the way it creates your hormones. I mean, when you go out there, you're going to really be hormonally ready to go. And if you keep things to a short, intense workout, meaning no more and then an hour. I like to do it in 45 minutes. I'll set an egg timer a lot of times. You do that, you're going to promote your testosterone, and you'll have your growth hormone kicking too. So if you want, go into that a little bit. I mean, you know, how fats go after hormones, and especially when we're going out and engaging in heavy work for a short, limited amount of time. If you would, comment on that, please.
Well, you know, cholesterol is one of those frogs that got demonized. It's the foundation for every hormone. Without cholesterol, you can't make your hormone. Without cholesterol, you don't have a healthy cell membrane. And we know now that the intelligence of the cell, and of course we have trillions of them, is in the cell membrane. So if you have a lot of saturated fat and cholesterol in the cell membrane, which is what is healthy, that's the majority of the cell membrane, then you can have all this communication in the cell. And of course, where all your ATP and energy is produced in these little battery cells called mitochondria. So you need to be out of this healthy transport system for ATP, for communication. Eating a fat diet, this helps that whole membrane. So it also it supports the immune system. It supports the myelin sheath and your nerves. Cholesterol was so important in evolution. And when I say cholesterol, that comes from all animal fats, right? That's a saturated fat. That's why I'm saying that.
Yep.
Cholesterol
yep.
was so important in evolution that there were times when a traditional man wouldn't have any gain because there'd be whatever, a drought or lack of the migrating herds, that the liver developed the ability to create cholesterol from carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
That's how important cholesterol was, right? So the faulty thinking from this point of view, again, about, say, cholesterol medications is that the body's doing something wrong.
Yep.
And the only reason why the medical profession views the liver, you know, because it makes the cholesterol is doing something wrong because they think cholesterol is bad. And of course, when you research it, and you don't got to research too far, you realize that cholesterol is vital for the brain, it's vital for the nervous system, it's vital for the hormonal system, it's vital for the cell membrane, as I mentioned. It's so important. In fact, a year ago, it came out that it was probably just discovered that the sugar industry was paying all these researchers to tell everyone was fat when it was all along, you know, big player in that problem with sugar.
Right.
And so, you know, it goes back to, you know, money again, of course. But it's so important for the fat. And my favorite fat, if I'm going to go before a workout, is coconut oil.
Yep.
Only because coconut oil metabolizes very fast. And the one I use a lot, as you know, is I make my own raw milk kefir every morning.
Yep.
The nice thing about kefir is it's pre-digested, right?
Yep.
Because that's what happens. It's breaking it down. It's loaded with all those enzymes. It's loaded with probiotics. And I mean, every, you know, I got a pretty busy schedule, so I keep my kefir in my refrigerator in the office. And, you know, usually by around 4:30 in the evening, I'm already starting to get slammed. I'm doing it for a while. I start feeling tired. So I just take a couple of big cups of kefir, and it's like, you know, Popeye's spinach.
Yep.
I feel like I just come back. You know, it doesn't take any energy to digest it. It's just like you just suck it up.
Yep.
So my favorite is the raw milk kefir. Because, wow, as a preloader, man, you just – and not only are you getting the fat, you're getting the protein, which is easy to digest. You're getting all the minerals because it's grass-fed.
Yep.
Yeah. That's my favorite. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's the way to load. I like those two the best because they're easily metabolized.
Yep.
Coconut oil is such a miracle oil. And to this day, you know, for the most part, the cardiovascular section of the medical profession doesn't recommend that for the heart. It's an incredibly good oil for your heart.
Yep.
And in fact, from what I studied from one of my teachers, he's telling me that now the thought is that cholesterol is an antioxidant. Cholesterol is, you know, it's so important for so many functions because it makes this stuff called cholesterol sulfate, which is, I mean, it's just, you know, and that, and by the way, that comes from the LDLs, the ones that were always thought of being bad.
Yeah.
It's sulfate,
yeah.
You need to make, you know, cholesterol sulfate. So the whole theory about cholesterol, I think they're looking in the wrong place. It only started in the mid-70s. You know, this guy, I can't think of his name now, but it was this big study just came out. I think it was in Minnesota. And the whole study proved that the theory was wrong. And then, so they just, you know, shelved it. And finally came out and they're like, well, why did it shelve it? Well, they shelved it because it didn't confirm what they were looking for.
Exactly.
So the whole theory is wrong. And the problem is when people are on these low-fat diets, and essentially these cholesterol medications, it's not a neutral thing. It's a really, because we know the fats are so good for us. And so people are substituting the good fats with all these vegetable fats, you know, soybean oil and canola oil. And those things should be absolutely avoided. They're terrible. They're already rancid when you buy them. The government allows these companies to deodorize the oil so you can't smell them. If you smelt them, you wouldn't even use them if they weren't deodorized. So, but when you go on a slow fat diet, if you're not eating enough fat, guess what? You're eating too much carbohydrates.
Yeah.
Too much carbohydrates. They're saying now something like 33% of the kids born from the year 2000 on are going to get diabetes.
Exactly.
And that's because they're eating too many carbs, you know?
Yep.
So if you're eating fat, you're eating carbs.
And that goes right back to something people have said to me, because I drink a lot of raw milk, and they're like, aren't you worried about sugar? And I've spoken to a number of people who are farmers, you know, organic farmers, and they're like, you're not going to ever have any type of diabetic problems with a raw milk because it's not heated, it's not pasteurized, it's not robbed of all its nutrients.
And it's grass-fed.
And that's the thing, because what they're doing – You know, back way in the day, in the 50s, 60s, 70s, we were talking about this the other day. A great way to gain a lot of body weight and a lot of strength is by doing 20 rep breathing squats and pullovers. And the big secret, when you stimulated the body like that, they were drinking gallons of milk. Now, back then, milk was not destroyed the way it is today. I don't know what happened, good or bad, with some of those individuals, but these people they were horses, man. I mean, big time. So they're trying to equate today's milk with, you know, what's going on with the diabetic world and this, that, and the other thing. Totally disagree with them. We can prove it. We just talked about it right now. So, you know, if anyone's going to drink milk, find somebody. You know, Mark told you. Western Price Foundation, go out and Google that, and you'll find out in your area where you can get milk, grass-fed beef. And you know what? I have nothing to do with anybody. I'm not getting paid by anybody, but support your local farmer, man. I mean,
Eric, the site is called realmilk.com.
Okay, realmilk.com. All right.
And you plug in your state, and it'll tell you everyone that's near you. In New York State, you have to buy the raw milk on the farm. That's
yes.
Illegal. You know,
yeah. Well, that's what burns me up. You know, if I go to the co-op, they sell Hawthorne Valley, which is usually where I go to get my milk. They'll sell their yogurt, but you get into it with them all the time. Well, we can't transport it in New York State to the store. What a bizarre law. I mean, you know, it's insane. So I don't mind going
to the states with the biggest dairy businesses have more restrictive raw milk laws.
Jesus Christmas. It's
economics again.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing.
The farm I go to has it's a smaller farm. The farm I go to has raw milk,
yep.
Raw milk butter, raw milk yogurt, and even raw milk cream.
Wow. Hey, Mark, you can name them if you want, because there might be people in your area or up here if you want to give their name out.
Well, unfortunately, they just sold the farm.
Okay.
So there's a new owner. Number one, I don't know if the new owner is going to be selling this stuff yet. It's going to be transitioning shortly.
Oh, okay.
When you sell a farm like that, the new owner has to go through all the paperwork and stuff to reestablish itself as a raw milk farm.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the status of that is, so we'll just leave that in the
back burner. Okay, that's fine.
But, you know, back in the day, they used to do, like the lady clinics, we'd have to put people on raw milk fasts, you know, for extended periods of time. And in order to assess that, I wanted to do it myself. So last year, I did all I drank was raw milk and kefir for a month.
Oh, wow.
And not only did I not lose weight, I didn't gain weight either, but I never felt hungry, and I never felt it's actually fairly easy. The milk is such a rich – it's like an egg, you know, or
a
nut.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's got everything in it you need it for the next generation, and as long as you're getting it from organically and grass-fed, it's quite healthy.
Absolutely.
I know there's a one argument that says, you know, well, you know, in nature, you know, the animals never get milk past, you know, that short period when they're first born. Well, you know, that's not really a logical argument. You know, I've never seen a cow driving a car. In other words, just because they don't have the intelligence to do that doesn't mean it's bad.
Right.
It's just like, you know, they don't grow corn either. We eat corn. You know, it's nothing wrong with raw milk. In fact, it's an incredibly nutritionally dense food.
Yep.
There's nothing harmful in it. Now, pasteurized milk, I generally recommend to my clients to avoid it or just use it sparingly, you know, in tea or coffee. There's no real nutritional value left in it. It's hard to digest. They kill all the enzymes. And the problem, the thinking with pasteurized milk is it almost doesn't matter the health of the cow or where it comes from, because we're going to pasteurize it and make it okay.
Yeah.
So they have sick cows, cancerous cows. You know, who knows where all stuff is coming from? And nobody knows because it's thought of like, who cares?
Yeah.
It has no real nutritional value sometimes because most of these cows aren't grass-fed. A lot of them being fed, you know, whatever they're being fed, GMO stuff, or
growth hormone, whatever they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole reason why the raw milk industry started having trouble way back when, is because they would set up these things called swill breweries, and they would feed these cows the leftover sludge from breweries.
Yep.
You know, and they've taken out all the nutrients, and they give the cows this basically this, you know, fermented crud.
Yep.
And of course, the cows got sick, and tuberculosis went into the milk. It wasn't the cow's fault. It's the way man produced it that created the problem.
Yep.
And my understanding with raw milk, pasteurized milk, it was supposed to be a temporary measure that just because of, you know, shelf life, you know, it increased. Like, you know, you get this organic pasteurized milk now.
Yeah.
They actually ultra pasteurize it.
Yep.
And that actually makes the shelf life even more. So when I first bought that years ago, before I got into the raw milk thing, I bought it and put it on the bottom of my shelf, and I literally, it got buried back there. I forgot about it. And I pulled it out like months later. I was like, oh man, I just bought this expensive milk. I forgot about it. And it wasn't expired yet.
Yeah.
And they have this outrageous expiration because it's even ultra pasteurized.
Yeah.
Which is, I understand why they do it. Again, it's economics, but here you're taking organic milk and making it worse.
Because yeah.
It doesn't got pesticides, and now it's like, you know, so, you know, it's either, you don't have to do milk. I mean, a lot of people don't like milk. So that's the cool thing about Weston Price. It's not saying you have to do milk, but then you got to get, how are you going to get your A and D? Well, you have to do egg yolks. Well, I don't want to do that. Then you got to do cod liver oil. I don't want to do that. You got to do something. So luckily, most people will do one of those. The challenge with the vegan diet is you can't get your fat-soluble vitamin.
No.
I think there's an argument that says, well, your body can synthesize, like if I take beta-carotene, that's going to make vitamin A. Well, probably in some people's genetics, that's true, but I would imagine most genetics, more than 50%, can't do that. You really need the whole fat-soluble vitamin A.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, that's, yeah, different theories. I'm a big fan of any diet. Not a big fan of the vegan diet, but I have a nephew that's doing that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know,
I have a niece.
What happens, he'll do it for a while, and then he'll start feeling crappy, and then he'll start eating, you know.
Yeah,
something.
Fat again, meat, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about the fats, and, you know, we talked about, obviously, in the beginning with the fascia. I mean, you know, just from when you go and work on somebody, you know, recovery now is the buzzword with everything. You know, no matter what you're doing, you got to recover. And I think with a high-fat diet, minimized carbohydrates, et cetera, you got a lot better chance of recovering a lot quicker from injury. Obviously, when you go down and get worked on, you know, it's fantastic, but it's another thing that you're putting on your body that you need to recover from. So I think with fats, raw milk, you know, kefir, butter, whatever you want to use, obviously grass-fed meat, it keeps you a lot more in the game, and the amount of recovery is going to happen that much quicker. Plus, something we didn't really touch upon, and we can always do that on another show because I know we're getting near time. Just the role of fats playing on the brain, the whole mental thing, and we know.
Yeah.
We know people, I've read articles where people were put on cholesterol medicine and a low-fat diet, and they would be literally somewhere out in public, say, I read one thing where a guy was at a Home Depot, and he was so confused he didn't know what to do. Someone had to come and attend to him because he couldn't even think straight how to get in this, why he was there. So let's just go over briefly, and the next time we meet, we can start talking about that, among other things. The role of fats mentally, what's your feeling on that, Mark?
Well, first of all, I'd like to change the perception of what you're talking about from a high-fat diet to just a normal, healthy diet.
Okay.
It's only considered high fat because the status quo in this, you know, moment in time is low fat.
Yep.
It's not really a high-fat diet. It's what the value of Weston Price was. He studied how is man for hundreds of thousands of years ate.
Yep.
The need for eating that way hasn't changed. When you eat the way you're talking about, it's eating a healthy fat diet, not more than you need, unless you just, you know, it's just about 50% of your diet, give or take, you know, 10%, say, is fat. And then the breakdown, according to Weston Price, was approximately, again, it's a give and take, 50% of that is saturated, 40% is monounsaturated, and 10% is polyunsaturated. And the polyunsaturated were never cooked with. They were looked at as healing oils. So
yep.
Polyunsaturated are things like cod liver oil, black seed oil, black currant seed oil, you know, things like that. So, you know, that's the breakdown. So the brain is 65% fat. So you need fats. I mean, that's just that's how you feed your brain, right? So when someone calls you a fathead, say thank you.
Bad joke. But, good joke, though.
The problem is that there's been numerous cholesterol studies that had to be stopped prematurely because too many people in the study group are getting Alzheimer-like symptoms, and also it's happened when people get developing cancer.
Yep.
So fat, if you look at that, I would say eating good fats is one of the strategies for keeping yourself as a cancer at bay.
Yep.
It's really important for so many things. I'm going to go into that at one point, but also it's your brain. So first of all, just eating cholesterol medication from an environmental evolutionary standpoint doesn't make sense because again, nature developed the ability for the liver to make cholesterol because it was that important.
Yep.
So man shutting down the liver's ability to make cholesterol doesn't make sense. And the reason they did it is because they came up with this whole low-fat idea.
Yep.
It didn't work. Cardiovascular disease is the number one reason why we're dying as Americans and growing. So that it's not working. So what they did was they said, well, let's change the amount of fat, cholesterol level from 300, which is what it used to be, to 200. So they lowered it 100 points arbitrarily. And that didn't work. So let's give cholesterol medication because, fat's the problem. Instead of changing the theory, fat's the problem. So let's give cholesterol medication. And that's not working. In fact, I read a quote. I think it was, I'm guessing this figure, I think it's about 250,000 heart attacks a year are being attributed to cholesterol medication.
Yep.
Because it zaps your coenzyme Q, which is part of the, muscle energy. So without having adequate fat, you're going to be in trouble. I think right now Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death in this country.
Yeah.
Really a terrible way to go, at least for your loved ones. In order to keep your brain healthy, you got to have fats. But also without adequate fats, you get this thing called potentially, with all the dietary considerations, and in general term, it's called leaky gut.
Yep.
And that you often find the brain barrier compromised with leaky gut. So then you can have literally crap going in the wrong place. But essentially, when we look at any condition, it's saying, what do you get from Western price perspective? What do you need if you're not getting? So that we know what those ratios are, because that's been studied over and over again. So many minerals, so much fat. And then what are you eating that you shouldn't be getting? What's the thing you're getting in your diet? GMOs, pesticides, too much sugar, too much simple carbs, too much alcohol. What is it? So we go through a nutritional consultation. We just say, this is why it would be ideal. What are you willing to do?
Mm-hmm.
And, the sicker a person is, the more they're willing to do things. But I'm telling you, here's the weird thing, Eric. I have people come in with fibromyalgia and diabetes and all kinds of things. And I give them this, rap that we're talking about. And I would say the majority of people don't change their diet. Majority more than 50%. I'm always amazed by that, because I'm already doing what I'm suggesting to them, and I don't have that condition.
Yeah.
What's the downside? And I think it's because I think if people really believe something, they would do it, right?
Yeah.
The only reason why you wouldn't do something because I don't think you have this inherent belief system that has value. And that's because we're sort of programmed by our culture that, it doesn't, all this other stuff works, and that's what, just keep doing that stuff, and that doesn't have an effect on you or whatever. So I really believe on some deeper, maybe unconscious level, people don't believe that food is medicine.
Yeah. No, you look at it, this is the way it's, the education now, especially because there's so many companies, large companies now that have bought a lot of these smaller nutritional companies and just have taken them and, maybe put a little money into them, made them look a little fancier when you go out and look at the product. But let's face it, the majority of them, the products are garbage. And,
It's even worse?
What's that?
These companies buy these little companies like Muir Grand and Tom's toothpaste and all these other Amy's products.
Yep.
These companies buy these organic companies, and then they take the profits from the organic companies to make the legal definition of what's organic change.
Yep. Yep. Then they go and put out the good companies that are doing a good job and literally try to push them right out of business. And that's what's happening with everything. I can remember years ago a company called Twin Lab that we used to buy a lot of their stuff for weightlifting. And their stuff at one time was head and shoulders above everybody. Well, I believe the father who originated it died off and he left it to his kids, and his kids did the thing like a lot of people do. They sold it to a big conglomerate, And the next thing you know, one item that was really good would suddenly disappear, not there anymore. Everything got cheaper, and eventually they went out of business. And it doesn't surprise me one bit with what we see going on here with everything. That's why, you know, I'll go back again. Stay local. And, you know, be careful of all these supplements. Make sure whomever you're buying them from is truly, you know, what is in the product is honest. Because I know just from bodybuilding stuff or whatever you want to label it as, the majority of this stuff out there, if you get 1% of what you're paying for, you're lucky. What you're paying for is the advertising, the slick look, the slick models they use, all that. So, you know, you're right on the money with that too, Mark. I mean, you're eating what nature has always provided for all of us. The problem is now, how many years? I don't know, what, 50 years, 40 years of manipulation of telling you that fats are no good, cholesterol will kill you, too much exercise is no good. But the alternative now with a lot of people is this: limited exercise, high amounts of estrogens. Your endocrine system is in upside down mode. Men can't understand why they're putting these big paunches on around them, and why, you know, I've read so many things about this. It's like they can't make decisions anymore. They, you know, it's totally flipped upside down. And the thing is, it's pretty damn simple. How about just exercise, even if you're walking? How about eating the meat, the food that we were destined and always made to eat? And number three, in my opinion, is get a goal and put it to yourself and really struggle with it, fail with it, and then eventually win with it. And I think right there, those three things can change your life exponentially. But once again, as you and I have talked multiple times about, you know, you've got to be willing to commit and take action to things. And that's a thing right now I feel, this is my opinion, I feel we're sadly lacking right now, at least what I've seen around me through the show, all that. And we're trying to change all that. Well, I'm not going to say we're trying. We will change it. And we have. We've had a lot of success with people that have been on the fence with entrepreneurship. People that haven't trained in 10 or 15 years have come, listened to us, and it got them very motivated to get going again. So we're on the right path to changing things, and I feel as this show grows bigger and bigger, and now it's getting to the point where it's all over the world, we are going to get to where we got. And when we've got people like you on and the other family members, things change. It might take a little while because this didn't happen overnight. This took decades to produce, but we got a shot with that. Go ahead, take it.
I was going to say, Eric, the value of your show is sort of what I just mentioned.
Yep.
The first step before people take action, they have to be educated. They have to understand, like, why is it important that I eat this way or exercise or do this or that?
Yep.
Because most people aren't aware, like, for example, GMOs aren't necessarily your best health strategy, right? Most people aren't aware that, you know, different medical procedures could be sidetracked if you did this or that. You know, before someone comes in to me, for example, with degenerative arthritis,
yep.
They don't realize, you know, they always say, like, what did I do? It's not anything you did, it's everything you've done.
Yeah.
You know, your diet, your exercise, your lack of, you know, having some tune-ups for the body work. I mean, one of my teachers said, you're free to choose to live and think any way you want, but you're not free from the consequences of a decision.
Correct.
So if you don't think, you know, eating McDonald's every day is going to affect you, that's fine. But then, you know, talk to me in 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's a difference of opinion. And I'm not saying you should or shouldn't eat McDonald's, because that's not the conversation. But if you're, you know, I like to keep people at 80% above healthy lifestyle.
I agree.
You know, I don't want to be 100, that's boring. But 80%, you know. So, but at the same time, you know, if I'm going to go with, I'm going to have a treat, I'm going to go with some ice cream, right? If I'm not going to make myself, I'm going to go and get like some hardcore good stuff, like Ben and Jerry's or something.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to the local soft serve place, which is just pasteurized milk with corn syrup and flavoring.
Yep.
I'm going to go with the top tier, you know, ice cream.
Yep.
Or if I'm really rambunctious, I'll make it myself. I mean, ice cream back in the day was healthy. It's just eggs, raw milk, a flavoring. It's like food.
Yep.
So, you know, but the point is that you don't got to be 100%. But even when you break those choices, you could say, well, let me eat something like, oh, dark chocolate, a real good piece of organic dark chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
You know, crappy candy bar.
Yeah.
So you can even, with that 20%, make healthier choices. You know, you can have, you know, you get the point. You could just do something that makes it, you know, and when we talk about raw milk, I got a Soft Start place right down the block from me, and I drive by there in the summer, and it's like, you know, it's packed, you know.
Sure.
I come home, and I just have a big glass of raw milk. To me, I find that more enjoyable than the ice cream itself. I find that quite a treat. And it's sweet, like you say, but it's a balanced sweetness. That's healthy, you know. So once you change your taste buds,
yeah,
you can still get those treats, but you don't want to go to the other thing because it's like it's disgustingly sweet.
Yeah, and you know what? And you know what? You hit it right on the mark with changing your taste buds, because I can attest to that totally. There were so many things I used to like to eat, and now I look at them, and I can smell the sugar off them even now, and I won't go near them because I know one or two things. You know, we're coming up with Thanksgiving and Christmas now. There's going to be a lot of things that you haven't been eating, a lot of things you haven't been seeing, okay? If I get careless with things, and I don't like taking myself either, because you hit it another point, which was great. You don't want to take yourself and turn yourself into like an anxiety machine and a mental wreck over food. You've got to know what your limitations are with it and what you want to eat and discard, okay? But let's face it, you know, when somebody makes a nice apple pie or a cherry pie or a pumpkin pie or whatever, I still like having a piece of that. But I won't go over one piece because I'll tell you right now, I get really like sugar whacked out because I don't eat many sugars at all. So that plays on me real hard. So I know it's the same way too. I usually have a drink or two drinks a year, and I only drink bourbon. I'll have one on Thanksgiving and one on Christmas, and that's it for the whole year. And sometimes I don't even have it on Thanksgiving. I always have a bourbon at Christmas. So I know my limitations, I know what I like, and I know that it's very easy in the next 5-6 weeks to get in some trouble there, and I don't want that because I have to train all year round outside. I have to be ready to go, and as I've told you and everybody else on the show, we're planning on a big stone tour trip in June where we're going to meet in Iceland. We're going to go to Scotland and Wales to lift the most famous stones. So I've got to be very careful what I'm putting in my body because I'm going to need all that in me to be able to transfer, obviously, with the business and with the training I'm doing outside. So very important. Very, very important. Mark,
I'll tell you
go ahead.
One other quick thing.
Yeah.
One of my addictions I really like to have every once in a while is potato chips, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The problem with potato chips is, even if they say no trans fats,
yep,
they're all cooked in these polyunsaturated oils, you know, like
yep,
canola oil or soybean oil. So once you cook it in these polyunsaturated, they may not have trans fats on the way in, on the way out, they're loaded.
Yep.
And just like you could smell sugar, I could smell these rancid oils, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Potato chips. So for years, I was like waiting for somebody to make a better potato chip. So the first generation, somebody started making it with olive oil.
Yep.
Which is better, but it's still monounsaturated. So now there's a company just came out with organic potato chips. I can't think of the name of it, but it's in the health food store. Organic potato chips in coconut oil.
Okay.
So and with sea salt. So you,
yep,
know, you talk about a healthy snack. I'm getting that fix from the sea salt and the potato. It's organic,
yep,
potato, so that's healthy for me. And it's cooked in coconut oil, and that oil doesn't degrade when you fry it.
Right, right.
So to me, that's like, wow, what a win-win. I'm getting my snack buzz. And it's not unhealthy.
Exactly.
So that's my point.
No,
there's enough awareness that there's products out there that are getting some play, and people could buy these things, and you know, so you're getting that fix without harming yourself. And
absolutely.
That's like, you know, your win-win right there.
Absolutely. All right, Mark. Summarize anything you want. Give out your website, any information. I'll give mine, and just hang on the line if you would, please.
Well, I guess we sort of got a little off topic on the fossil stuff, which is fine. You know, these things are dynamic. They go where they want to go. But I guess the summation on the fossil stuff, we could probably have another chat about,
yeah,
that because we didn't,
sure,
really go into detail on it.
Yep.
Basically, again, if you have an issue that's not being resolved, you should suspect a fossil component at least. And there's multiple techniques that all work on fossil. There's, you know, many ways to work with it. But find someone that knows how to do that, whether it's a massage therapist. The nice thing when you go to these fossil classes or these upper classes, there's all different dynamics. There's PTs, there's massage therapists, there's chiropractors, there's sports trainers. So there's multiple professions that are doing this now. And so you can go usually find someone in your area if you have to. But that's something I'd look at if you have some issue that's not being resolved, because that's probably it. And then again, that's what we do here also. We're SauganiesChiropracticCenter.com. And you, on my website, it will go, it gives you a little brief description of what fossil stuff is.
Yep.
If it's new to you.
And don't forget, if you got to get a hold of Mark, this is for the New York state area, but I'm sure he'd talk to you regardless. 845-246-5020, and you'll get somebody right at the desk. They're great people there, and I'm sure I know from past conversations, Mark will return your call. That's real important because a lot of people don't do that. You got anything else, Mark?
No, I think, like I said, we could probably have another conversation with more detail with the foster.
We will.
If you want.
We will. That's not a problem at all.
The website's a good place to start to understand it. You can Google it. There's a lot of information out there.
Okay.
You know, and then you'll notice when you start Googling it that there's, you know, maybe a dozen ways to look at it and to treat it, and they all work. You know, it just depends on who you are and what practitioner you're going and what you need. But they're
absolutely
all good stuff. And but the bottom line is it's the soft tissue that we're finding has more and more of a predominance in these injuries.
Okay, great. This is Motivation Muscle Streaming Radio 24/7. Go out there and download the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle in our 30-day course, which that course alone, we're just going to keep adding newer and newer stuff onto it. That right there is a book in its own. Don't forget, too, we are doing a book for next year called I Promise, and basically you have to start whatever the line is going to be with I Promise. This is going to be big because this is going to be something that you're going to be able to carry around with you or download, and when you're having those days where you feel like you're going to surrender, you read that, you learn to quiet your mind, you'll read all those passages, and I promise you it's going to change how you feel. Also, too, motivationmuscle.com/category/podcast. Go out and look at all the shows we've got. We've got the deepest vault of people out there, and we'll have Mark show up within 5 days, so you'll have another chance to go out and listen to Mark and myself, and obviously we'll be doing more shows in 2017. Motivationmuscle.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Give us a 5-star review. That's what everybody has done, and we appreciate that. Also, we're in multiple directories now that we're streaming. You can go out to Google Play Music, TuneIn, Shoutcast, and all the new cars have the capability for podcasting, and we're on AHA, that's A-H-A. If there's a show you'd like Mark and I to do, FiorelloBarba@NICAP.R.com, and I'll leave you with these 5 things. If someone seeks you out in the gym or the concrete jungle, never be afraid to give words of inspiration. 5 words will change your life. Also, as my mom said when we were kids, never be afraid to say hello to someone or give them a smile. That might be all they get that day. If you're going to lift like me today, bend it, break it, squat it, press it, pull it. If you're going to lift stones, turn them into dust. As the great Hoosa Steel Stone Crusher says in Blood Red, domination, we are domination. We clear cut the path. We don't follow anyone's. And as I say with everything I write and live by, dominate, obliterate, and dent everything in your path. Also, as Russell Fur says, who's been listening to Eminem from the beginning and who's a guest, he says, when I listen to your shows, I swear there's testosterone dripping out of my speakers. We will say that to the day we sign off, my friend, and that will be another 28 years. And some other things here. Frank Klein, who was by far the greatest college teacher I ever had for all of my business and marketing. Repetition, repetition, repetition. My father, be a leader, not a follower. And my good friend, who was my chiropractor for years before I started going to Mark, we lost him to cancer, and he said 2 words that were incredible. Keep smiling, and I dare you say that to yourself and not smile. Also, too, be a steward of strength. Don't stand on the side of the road and watch the world go by. And tell 100 or more of your friends, because we're not going to knock on your door. We'll kick the thing right in. Join our family. Join our revolution. Mark, it's an honor to have you on. Thank you for being on, sir.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, sir. So, for Mark Colligan, this is Eric Fiorello. Thanks for listening. We'll have Mark on very soon. Don't forget, you all have greatness, but the best thing is we got your back. So we'll talk to you soon. Have a great week, everybody, and just get happy with everything you do. Take care.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.